Although
the,
I don't think they'll like my knockoff Temu playmats. But if they could make some decent ones, I wouldn't have had to get those for $8 a piece.
So I'll put this in the intro of the show for it.
Yeah.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Player 2 Pixelcast. This is episode 184 and I didn't even need to ask Rob for that number. I knew it because I was prepared and I'm hosting. My name is Matt Hewson. I am here instead of Tim, who is currently drinking Guinness and Jameson in Ireland and ignoring us all, so he's lumped me with the job of looking after it tonight. But luckily, I'm being joined by two very capable casters in old heads. Stephen, how are you?
I'm quite well.
You're quite well? You're ready
despite my old head.
I mean, it's a very lump term for this group, I feel. It's not singling anyone out at all by saying old heads here. And that other old heads with us is Rob. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, considering, you know, just trucking on.
Trucking on. Well, tonight we've, in honour of Pragmata's release, and it's wonderful kind of PS3, PS4 vibes of gameplay, we thought we'd have a look at some great gameplay mechanics over the years, and probably some not-so-great ones as well, and talk about how they've lasted, the ones that have stood the test of time, the ones that have died, and you know, go from there. But before then, we need to talk about games that may or may not have gimmicks in them. Rob, you've probably got the weirdest one of the group. iRacing, but it's arcade.
Yeah. So this is... it's not really right to call it a spin-off, but essentially I feel like it's sort of the iRacing trying to branch out from being the niche, hardcore online sim that it is and trying to maybe potentially draw people in. So this is a game that they did in collaboration with Original Fire, who are the studio who did a little game a few years back called Circuit Superstars.
Okay.
Which that was an overhead sort of little cartoony racer, and this kind of goes for that like slightly cutesy vibe with the visuals, like the tracks are scaled down, people have got like big heads over little bodies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But having the license through iRacing means that there's real tracks rather than all made up ones, and some real vehicles and some sort of fictionalized generic specials. So the idea is that you have your various leagues, like you start up with like the little Fiat 500 in the low tier. You get stuff like Formula Junior, which is sort of like, if you remember, like Formula Ford kind of thing you might have seen alongside like V8 races. Touring cars, there's like the Porsche GT3s and some of the fancier prototypes that you unlock, Formula 4 and stuff. And so the basic flow is you'll start up, there's like 7 seasons to race through, and each season is like made up of like 13 or so weeks. Each week starts up, you have a bunch of events to do, and like at the moment I think where I am, there's like 5 events in a week, and they'll be at different stages of different championships. And so you do that race. Some of them like really short races, like 3 or 4 laps. Obviously with sort of the cutesy style goes, well, the tracks are scaled down. So you're not, so like a lap that might take like, you know, 90, you know, minute and a half, it might be like 40 odd seconds. So they're sort of scaled down, keeps the races flying really fast. But you've got, stuff to watch for in like, you know, car damage and fuel use and tire wear. So you do have to do pits, and it's just a case of pull in the pit, let them do the car and go on. There are like longer endurance races that are like 12 to 15 laps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of the kind of thing where you could sit down in an evening, bash out a week's worth of events and then go on. And once you've done the week's races, you go to like the prize winnings to buy cars to put in your garage, buy like, you know, extra like, you know, flair for like your helmets, driving suits and like victory dance on the podium. But also you have this thing where you build out like your racing team's headquarters. And so you've got like the garage, the like engine chassis research facilities, and those, like, you know, expanding the garage lets you have more cars to hand, because if you go into one of the like the championships and you don't have that car, you have to rent it, and that costs you like a quarter of your winnings.
Right.
So you want to try and have all the cars in your garage so that you can maximize. And as well, what you can do is you can you can rent drive, you can hire drivers to race in some of the series as well, so you don't have to do all the races. But I think that kind of takes away a bit of the game's joy. Like, oh, you don't want to have, you do that, let a computer driver do it for you, and you just watch bars going up the screen. I think that takes a bit away. But the other thing that upgrading facilities gets you is boosts. So when you start, before you start a race, it's like you have a bunch of things unlocked each week, like better grip, like a secret fuel bonus on the last lap, big heads for the open wheelers, penalty, like a penalty advantage, because you do get penalties if you cut track limits. So you cut the inside of a corner kind of thing, you get a slowdown penalty, you get ghosted for a few seconds and run at slow speed and everyone will pass through. So there's all of that, and so you have to manage like which ones you want to allocate, because you can only use them once per week. So you might have the extra grip and it's like, what track I need this, you know, you want to save that for certain races, so you have to think about that. So there's a little bit of strategy involved, and of course, you know, you've got the race strategy of like trying to manage your fuel and tires as well, so you don't, you know, crash out in there. And the racing's like fairly easy to pick up and play, you know, you're not, you have to be aware of lines and slowing down, but most of the time you can just ease off the accelerator to, pardon me, to go through a corner rather than having to hit the brakes and be really precise as you would be if it was a more serious simulation. yeah, and it's plenty of chaos, and it's fairly chaotic as well. Like, the AI's definitely got a bit of argy-bargy aggressiveness to it, so a lot of that happens in the first couple of laps while things settle down. So yeah, it's a good pick-up-and-play experience. It's, I don't understand how the jump, because it feels like being a simple arcade racer, like going that jump to a full-on simulation, I feel like there needs to be a middle ground to get people jumping up, and I don't know how that's going to work. Like, I could see people playing this having a blast. The only thing that kind of sucks is there is multiplayer, and I believe there's going to be an update for sync, for split screen in solo for offline, but it's mainly like lobbies, so you have to share a room code around with some friends or stuff and then hop on. You can't just go pick up games like you
would. There's no matchmaking.
Yeah, there's no matchmaking. And I think that's, like, I was like, oh, I wouldn't mind trying to have a race or something. Try an online race or two. But yeah, it's just like, I don't want to go through joining up on some community and doing that stuff. I'd rather just do a pickup race and have a try. Then if I got serious enough into wanting to play it a bit more, maybe I would sign up on someone's Discord for something. It's all, at the moment, it's only on PC. It's supposedly coming to consoles later in the year. And some reviews said, like, that some of the content might be a bit low. I think they're kind of right. Like, there's 8 cars and, like, 14 or 15 tracks. I kind of wish there was a bit more, because you start seeing the same tracks fairly often. But it depends on how someone might be off that. But, yeah, it's pretty lightweight. Like, it runs on the potato here pretty well. You know, my 10-year-old rig. So it runs pretty well on that. So I can't really complain about that. I think the price, I grabbed it when it was on sale, and I'd probably say if you want to check it out, maybe wait for it on sale, or check out Circuit Superstars, which is a little older, might be a little cheaper.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sounds like a nice meta to it with the management stuff and things like that you don't usually see in an arcade racer.
No, you definitely don't see it. You're right. You definitely don't see it in an arcade racer. And I kind of like that. And I like that there's the variety of like having multiple things open at once so that you're mixing up the challenges as you go through. So
yeah,
I kind of like that as well. So there's a lot of good little things they've done right. And even though it's not quite perfect, it's still a pretty solid experience, I'm finding. Like I said, it's been great to just be one of those wind down at the end of the day games before going to bed.
Yeah, nice. Excellent, excellent. So on PC, Steam, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Consoles later in the year, basically, as I've read from other reviews.
Yeah,
I feel like it would be a good, like, on the couch game as well.
Yep. And you got the Steam Deck? Does it run well on that?
I've mainly been playing on the Deck, and it's been really good there. Performance is solid. Some early reviews said, like, at pre-release that it wasn't quite there, but patches or tuning the profiles, whatever, it seems like, I've not really had a problem with it.
Nice. Excellent. All right. Steven. You do like a bit of Don't Nod every now and then.
I do.
So, how's latest Don't Nod?
Aethelion is really interesting It feels like, in a good way, it feels like it's very much a departure from, I guess, what people would perceive as Don't Nod, which is obviously a lot of Life is Strange, but even they aren't developing all of those these days, and I guess those have been on the back burner while they were making Athelion. This is a sci-fi action-adventure game with a heavy focus on story and very AA game mechanics, which we'll talk about later. I'm probably 70% of the way through. It's not hugely long, I don't believe. It's probably like one of those 12 to 15 hour jobbies, which suits me fine these days. And it really kind of feels like it's come hot on the heels of Project Hail Mary in the cinema, like a great time for it to release. It's very much that sort of hopeful sci-fi, like, you know what, humans aren't useless, maybe we can do stuff.
So, maybe we're not all garbage.
It's got that sort of vibe going to it, and I'm quite enjoying it. It does some really cool things in terms of pacing. So you've got two characters that it sort of splits the chapters up between, and they both play a little bit differently, and what they're doing in each chapter helps the pacing quite a lot. So you've got more action centered, not that there's not really any combat, but there is more, I guess, action sequences and more, you know, sort of contemplative sequences with the other character. And I think that's a really great way to do it, because it does feel like if you didn't have those breaks, then the gameplay would stretch itself fairly thin. It really feels like they've kind of know how much of a stealth sequence people can really take, and they're not dragging that out, which I have to commend them for, because it's sort of, it's right when you would expect a lesser game to just chuck you in yet another room. You're like, oh, here we go again. It's like, no, that's it, you're done, you did it.
Yeah, good job.
So really cool. Again, it's very story based, so I'm pretty sure it's gonna have a nice payoff at the end. I'm not gonna spoil anything at this point, but if you liked Project Hail Mary and you like AA 360 PS3 PS4 climbing mechanics, then give this a look in, because it's quite good.
It's also on Game Pass, I believe. So if you've got Game Pass,
why don't you give it a go? What are you paying Microsoft all that money for?
Yes, you may as well get something out of it, right?
Even if you're not going to play it, download it so Don't Nod get a little download check mark and maybe a little bit more of a royalty. Come on, have a heart.
So is there anyone in this one? They usually get some decent voice acting as well.
I would not know. The leads are the female lead is French, and the male lead is British, and I think it's probably a good choice that I do not recognize either of these people, because it then lets them create a character opposed to, you know, that celebrity stunt casting. Yeah, wow. it's that Troy guy. Baker again. It's this person.
Yeah. Nolan North's back.
Yeah.
Cool. So you reckon it's worth it for Don't Nod fans, or is it something, you know?
I think, again, it's a bit of a departure from what you would expect out of something like Life is Strange. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more action focused, probably going back to a bit more like Remember Me and even Vampyr to some degree, yeah. But it's like less of that adventure game focus, a little bit more of the action focus.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, it's available now on everything, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out last week.
Last week, yeah. Cool. And, well, another game that came out last Friday that I played and reviewed is Invincible Versus, the new fighting game based on the very popular Amazon Prime TV show and comic book that I haven't watched, but my son, 16-year-old son, I will stress, really, really likes that show. So he was most excited when he found out I was reviewing it. It is a 3v3 tag fighter along the lines of Marvel vs. Capcom or something like that. It is, however, different. in that it's probably its fighting system is probably closer to Smash Brothers than to Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. It's a very pick up and play sort of fighter in that your special moves are literally a button press, and which direction you're holding determines which special move you do. So that's very much a Smash Brothers thing, right? So it makes it very easy for anyone to pick up and play. It does make it very awkward for someone like me who's grown up on Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. The first thing I did was when I picked up the controller, I went, I'm not going to do the tutorial. I've played 1,000 fighters. I'm going to jump in. I'm trying to do Hadoukens and stuff like that. Nothing's happening. And I'm going, what the fuck's going on here? This is shit. I've got to go and do the tutorial. Ah, right. Okay. I see where I'm going wrong.
This isn't your grandpa's fighting game.
No, this is not at all. This is something that everyone... But that in saying that it is pick it up and play, there is a lot of depth to it. It's very much about combos and stringing them together and switching between your fighters and continuing those combos on. Good players, I won't say me, but towards the end of it, I was getting confident enough to be switching fighters on the fly, picking the appropriate team. Like, it's very handy to pick a mix of kind of fighters in your team of three. And so there is quite a bit of strategy there, and I think there's a lot of potential there for it to be an esports game, and the developers have talked about those sort of aspirations. Obviously that all depends on how the fighting game community takes to it, but I definitely think there's potential there for that. The characters are all the voices from the TV show, so J.K. Simmons is there as Omni-Man what was his name from Breaking Bad? Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul?
Aaron Paul's there as the most emo electric guy ever. I've never seen the show, but geez, he annoys me in this game. But yeah, look, it's a lot of fun. The story mode is... Yeah, it takes a lot of liberties from Mortal Kombat's style of story. So if you've ever played the Mortal Kombat stories, you know what you're getting here. The same sort of deal, except the story doesn't have the kind of loving B-grade cheesiness that Mortal Kombat just leans into so heavily. So it feels more like a lost episode of the TV show that doesn't really have any major consequences at all. So it kind of just feels like an excuse to string a bunch of fights together. That's all it is. So not the greatest story mode. What else was happening in it? There are kind of fatalities. So if you've ever watched the show, apparently it is quite gory. They're more like the old Killer Instinct style fatality, in that if you do a certain special move as you finish someone off in the fight, they'll just explode into a bunch of gibs and bloody bits and things like that. So if you do a super or an ultra just as the characters finished off, they just explode into chunks and then move on, I guess. No one really thinks much of it. They go, oh yeah, all right, yep, cool. Some of the ultimate special moves are a lot of fun. Play on these superpowers. You know, they go really over the top. If you ever played Injustice and how the superhero ultimate moves were in Injustice, they're kind of that sort of thing where someone will get punched into space, or they'll, you know, get dragged around and thrown 100 times and zipped around the world and all this sort of superhero shenanigans. They've had a lot of fun. The animators have really captured the show from what I could see. The fighting model is fun, and I feel like it's going to be a really good party game for adults after a few beers. You know, if people don't want to play Smash Brothers, they can play this instead and have a lot of fun and blow people up into little gory chunks. And I feel like if you've watched the show, you'll obviously get a bit more out of, you know, the lore stuff that comes into it. But yeah, I like the characters. I like the range of fighters. I think there's a lot of depth there if you're willing to commit to it. It's a bit odd at first for someone that's played Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, but otherwise, yeah, really solid fighter that I think should find its place as long as it gets support. All right, we might have a break. We've talked about games. Now let's talk about some mechanics. I need to find some music. I don't know where Tim finds this music. So, you know, if we get corn or something in the middle, he could blame me and we get the copyright strike later. But we'll challenge that when I do the edit, and then we'll be back talking about game mechanics. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and yes, I am going to include Korn, and I hope it played well, and I hope we don't get a copyright strike, because they did release a new song for Diablo 4, and look, it's thematically appropriate, so why not? This has nothing to do with the topic, though, and the topic is gimmicks, unless you count a tie-in song as a gimmick, maybe, who knows? But we thought we'd talk about gimmicks and gameplay mechanics that have found their way to us over the years through different games, and then, for one reason or another, have seemed to have caught fire amongst other games, and they've been copied and recopied and improved and moved on, and eventually everyone gets sick of them and we forget about them. So we thought we'd have a look at some of those, and it basically came about because I recently played Pragmata, and a lot of people have, and it has this very cool mechanic in which you hack enemies before you can hurt them. It's a cool little mini game thing that kind of pops up when you target an enemy, and it's really well incorporated into the game. The combat is beautifully balanced to suit this mechanic, and it becomes a very cool core part of the whole experience. So that kind of got me thinking about other mechanics over the years that have kind of been balanced and wonderful, and I guess we wanted to look at the classics and the things that have stuck, and also some of the ones that have just gone, for better or worse. And why don't we start with some classics that are still around? Stephen, what have you got for us? I mean, Tim gave us a big list of stuff to talk about, but we can always ignore that because, you know, he's not here.
Yeah, what are you going to do, Tim? Yell at us from Ireland?
Yeah.
Quick Time Events is always... Yeah. A tried and true classic.
I thought that had come up.
Shenmue Quick Time Event, baby. Thanks so much for inventing that. It's really it's really been a blast these past 20-odd years to keep doing Quick Time Events.
Yeah.
Although, nowadays, thanks to the wonders of accessibility, you can piss a lot of them off, so that's quite good as well.
That is, it is good. Remember, like, God of War used to be fucking annoying for the doors, mashing buttons to open a door or open a chest. That sort of thing, like,
how else am I supposed to feel like Kratos?
Yeah, it's
ripping a door open.
Like, it was not in, just all so it did immersive. Was wear out your controller. That's the yeah. all it did.
Yeah, it was a big controller screwing us all over.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
them and Mario Party.
Yeah. Just destroy controllers. What about you, Rob? What's one that you're kind of happy to see the back of?
I think the hidden second quest.
Yeah, right, so, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think for everyone, they always think about the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
You beat the game, and it's like, oh, actually, you've got a second quest to do. And there are plenty of, like, arcade games where you'd have to complete the game twice
mm-hmm.
in order to actually see the true ending. Ghosts and Goblins is probably the well-known example of that.
And if you ever finish Ghosts and Goblins
no,
without spending, your entire pay packet in 20 cent pieces.
Yeah, no, I've never. I think I've only ever seen the second stage on the C64 version, which was kind of easier. Never even gotten that far on playing the arcade. And that's, I think I've only ever played it on, I've never seen Natural Cab or sat down on Natural Cab. I think I only just played it on, like, Capcom's collections or whatnot.
Yep.
Just like, yeah, that's, it's kind of that thing where, like, the first time I think I learnt of it was Pitfall 2 got converted from the Atari 2600 to a couple of Atari's later machines, their 8-bit computers and stuff, and the chap who coded that conversion got it done so quickly because he had access to all the source and stuff, and he's just like, I'm just going to throw a remixed quest in for fun. And just designed a whole second thing and threw it in as a bonus. And then, yeah, a lot of people just seem to run with that in probably different inspirations, not necessarily inspired by that.
But yep.
So much. I think it's like, I always think of it as well, like, you know, we play so many games these days that have really long run times.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people might say New Game Plus is kind of a descent of that, but New Game Plus, you're usually replaying the stuff you already know.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe unless at a higher difficulty with all your gear and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably, what, Nier Automata did a whole bunch of stuff as well that was kind of...
Well, it was different. Like, Nier and Nier Automata, they did weird shit in that the game was almost completely different.
Mm.
You had to
play. Much, much quicker on those subsequent runs as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always the one I keep thinking of, but I never sat down to play that properly, so
I don't have the experience. I think another cool iteration of that was when, was it Pokemon Gold and Silver, that once you beat like the Elite Four, it let you go back to the original like Kanto region, I think.
Ah.
From memory, which was like kind of a cool surprise them to chuck in there.
Yeah, that's actually like a really cool thing, because it's not just remixing the stuff that's in the actual game. It's going for bringing something extra in there. Like, I give props for that.
Well, I miss in a way, but also I can see why it's gone, is the secret character. You know, especially in arcade titles. Mortal Kombat used to be well known for that, you know. And you only found out through, because back in the day, there was no internet. You didn't go to IGN guides to look at what was going on. It became word of mouth that you could, if you did a double flawless fatality on the pit, you could, you know, fight Reptile, or, you know, and then they carried that on with 2 and 3, and it became kind of tradition for them. And now it's gone. The secret character is not there anymore.
That's the DLC character now.
That's what they charge the money for now. which is a shame. And a lot of times it was, you know, a secret character that was just a palette swap of an existing character.
Or the Tony Hawks would do like the fun cameo kind of ones.
Spider-Man or something, you know. Yeah. They were fun, yeah. And they don't seem to happen anymore. I can understand why, because, you know, things cost more now and you can't just get away with a palette swap anymore. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't work. Like, Mortal Kombat lived on palette swaps for the first 3 games. Like, let's face it.
These days, their skins and their 3,000 gold coins... Yeah. Which you can purchase in the store for real money.
Or if you play for 600 hours, you'll earn enough gold coins to buy one of the skins.
Yeah. And it's got to be in your season pass.
Yeah, and your season pass, yeah. In the premium 100. Season pass, yeah.
Premium.
Not the free one. God, we sound like cynical old bastards.
I thought of another weird one that kind of still pops up thanks to Sega, but it's the game hidden within the game, like Day of the Tentacle with Maniac Mansion, or you know, the arcade game you can buy and play inside the other game.
I remember there was a Mega Drive that was Jack Nicklaus golf. Oh no, Arnold Palmer golf. And if you got 99 shots on one hole, this was how you got to it. It gave you like this mini version of Fantasyland. To play, like the you know, the little Master System shooter. So that'd pop up and you could just play that. Like, but you had to get 99 over on a hole to get that, and that's how you found it. So you spent like 20 minutes hitting balls into the water, and then there you got got this mini game. It was cool. Like, stuff like that, that's fun.
And like Namco with the mini game loading screens.
Oh,
I think they patented that so no one else could do it.
See, this is the thing that gets my goat with that. Mm. They patented it and they shouldn't have been able to, because it was done in the 80s.
Was it?
Yeah, so a company called Mastertronic, who are a British firm that did budget releases for home computers, on a bunch of their C64 games, they had a thing called Invader Load, which is basically a very simple version of Space Invaders that played while the game loaded off cassette.
Yeah.
And they did a second one called Load and Play, which is a really weird shooter where you are crawling the edges of the screen and you're firing. They did a couple of them. And there are a few other ones as well on like the 8-bit home computers. And these from these UK publishers on cassette. And Namco got away off patenting it and they shouldn't have been able to.
There's a few of those instances. Speaking of, you know, dodgy ass legal decisions, I want to talk about one of the best mechanics I think I've come across in games in the last 20 years, and that's the Nemesis system in Shadow of Mordor and then Shadow of War. The idea that you have this kind of living, breathing, constant battle with certain enemies in the world that adapts as you play was glorious, and the thought of it being in other games and other developers using that, but then Warner Brothers patented it and haven't used it since.
It's
criminal.
Like, I think I heard recently that they've released it, like it's now other developers can use it.
Oh really? I haven't heard that, but holy shit,
if that's true, that's amazing.
It is
like, yeah that
that in like a Wolverine or a Spider-Man game, or like anything with like a decent rogues gallery where...
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if someone wanted to make a Captain America game or a Punisher game or something, you know, a bit of ultraviolence in it, that'd work. But yeah, this... I just don't get why they didn't use that again. It was just so well done. It was beautifully incorporated into both of those games. Like, Shadow of War had its problems in that it was just too bloody big. But otherwise, it was still very good. Shadow of Mordor was perfect. And yeah, I just don't get it. Like, why would you lock this down? And it kind of annoys me as a video game fan, because you look at the history of video games and they're iterative. Like, video games are an iterative process. People see what other people have done and build upon that. You took, like, for the first 10 years of first-person shooters, they were called Doom clones. You know, no one referred to them as a first-person shooter. They, right up until Quake, really, they were just Doom clones, you know? That's what people called them. But it didn't matter because they were doing different things and stuff like that. But, yeah. So, I don't get how you can do that. I just... It feels wrong to me as someone that's been playing games for such a long time. I feel like, you know, imagine if Gears of War patented cover shooting, you know, that's the kind of thing we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Or like, walls, you can't use those.
You can't use walls, you can't use them. No, we patented that. Or you know, Batman's timing combo, which we talked about before we started. Was Warner
Batman's
Brothers. They
could have Vision.
Batman's Detective Vision. Which got overused.
They nerfed it themselves in the sequel. They were like, no one spent any time not in this bloody thing in the first game. So didn't they tamped it down in the first one so you couldn't use it as much, or it just wasn't as useful?
Just wasn't. I don't think they it wasn't as important to the gameplay in the open world of Arkham City, I think, was more how it worked out.
Which, talk about a game that could have benefited from the Nemesis system.
Oh yeah, Batman. Yeah. Arkham Knight, that would have been good. Because that would have worked. Timing would have worked for those two to share that technology.
But no sharing. Another mechanic that actually comes from the board game world that's super popular these days, deck building. That's an 18-year-old mechanic.
Yeah.
From Dominion in 2008. And now it's getting flogged to death in video games everywhere.
In 30 emails I get every single morning from indie developers. If I see deck building roguelike one more time in my inbox, I'm going to scream. Yeah, and it doesn't help that, you know, games like Bellatro that were such big successes. So
they Slay the Spire, that's...
Yeah, you know, Monster Train. You know, the good ones are really good. So many not as good as the good ones, though.
Yep.
But it's sort of interesting that it's the development of it in video games kind of mirrored the development of it in the board game world, in that Dominion is what they call pure deck building. You're just building a deck. And then people sort of built on that, were like, well, what if we just rammed other mechanics into this mechanic and see what we could come up with? So now it's like, it's deck building, but there's area control. It's deck building, but you're placing workers. It's deck building, but you know, something else. So yeah, it's funny that kind of it's just the same thing happening but with video games.
There's nothing new under the sun, as they say.
No.
Speaking of gimmicks that have probably gone for good, although there seems to be some life in them at the moment, it's plastic instruments. There seems to be a little glimmer of hope. A little glimmer of hope there. There's a new game coming out later this year from a couple of the original Guitar Hero developers that have left Harmonix, obviously, and they're building a new one that will use... All of a sudden, we have third-party guitar options available out there, and they've decided, oh, why not? Let's jump back on the wagon, because there's a lot of people like my age that go, hey, that was a shitload of fun, pretending like I was Slipknot. That was unreal, you know? So maybe there is a bit of hope for that one. I'm for it. I don't know if the kids would be in for it. It seems to do all right on Fortnite, though, doesn't it? I don't know. I don't follow Fortnite, but I think it's fairly popular.
But when I heard about it in Fortnite, it was from olds.
Yeah, old people that went, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to play some Rock Band again, you know.
I didn't hear about it from
the kids.
Although I don't know many kids who play Fortnite, so maybe I'm just young. I listen to old.
Party like it's 2006.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it went on like a weird course, didn't it? Nowadays, those things that cost you a mint if you're trying to get some of the OG controllers, like...
Yeah, good condition ridiculous. Stuff is expensive. When I was in Japan last year, I walked through one of the game stores and they were going for quite a bit, I think. So, yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Another thing that came and went, probably for the better, is companion apps.
Oh, yes. Thank goodness. For that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
your second screen experience.
Yeah.
I remember the one that I always remember was the stuff around Mass Effect 3, like the extra junk.
Yeah.
So you could do extra junk to get stuff for your war effort. Like, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was for the surprisingly good multiplayer component of it. That was, you know, quite good. I really quite liked that multiplayer because it was PvE, so I really enjoyed that. But yeah, all that extra shit. Black Flag had one too, where you'd send your pirate ships that you captured off on missions and things like that. And yeah, but you could do that in game as well. I think originally you could only do it in the app, but they later patched it into the game because they realized no one was doing it on the app.
Yeah, remember GTA 5 had one as well, like the iFruit app that you could like do things in, and I think they canned that.
Yeah,
around 2018, 5 years after the game launched.
5 years after it had been released twice.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Second release.
The only game that's lasted three generations, you know.
Yeah. 13 years for a sequel, baby. Let's go.
Yep. Yep. And it's coming. It's coming.
Possession.
Sorry, which one?
Possession.
Possession. Ooh, interesting.
Like, think like, you know, Shiny's Messiah.
Yep.
Where your little cherub character was possessing dudes to get through.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel that was a mechanic that could have gone a bit further, but it seemed to have, like, it was there. Maybe some other
Watch Dogs Legion, baby.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. See, I thought that game was very ambitious. It didn't quite nail it in the end.
Yeah.
But it was incredibly ambitious, and I think it deserves cherries for that. You know, it tried to be something big, and you know, it kind of missed the mark. But it was certainly an ambitious game for Ubisoft at that time. Like they weren't really known for reinventing the wheel very often at that point, so you know, it was nice to see. I thought it didn't quite hit it, and it lacked some immediacy of a story that was built around a set group of characters. I think that's probably what killed it the most. But otherwise, it was an interesting idea that almost worked. I think almost
one that we sort of have complained here and both on the website recently in regards to Kiln is the death of split screen.
Yep.
And couch co-op.
Yeah, I miss it. I do miss it. Like, I've got a projector in the backyard, and really the only thing that gets to work on that games-wise is the Switch, because it's the only thing that seems to have a few couch co-op experiences, and predominantly it's Mario Kart or something like that. There's just not many, unless you're a fighting game player. Like, fighting games still great for it. The problem is, it's not fun for people that are shit at them playing someone that is shit at them. It is pretty decent at them. Like, I'm not saying I'm a good fighting game player, but I can play them. So me playing my wife in that is not great, because she ends up dying very easily, and, you know, I'm not going to let her get the easy win. That's just not fun. So, it's not what they're about, people. So I think we need more options like, you know, the Mario Karts, the old school platformers. You used to be able to play Mario. Like, I think Mario Wonder you can play.
Well, what's a split screen FPS you'd play these days?
There isn't.
Screen Cheat?
That was Screen Cheat. Last one. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're having to go back, like,
64.
Get the, yeah, you can get, like,
Halo.
Halo did it, yes.
I was going to add that you could get the reissue of the Time Splitters games on PlayStation.
Gears does split screen still. Up to all Gears games have done it. They have said that it's coming in E-Day as well. They think it's just an inherent part of the Gears experience is to play co-op. which is nice. I love playing Gears in co-op. It just is a game that's really good in co-op, and even their horde mode and stuff like that's fantastic in co-op. So that's nice to know. But once again, it's a game for gamers.
And, yeah.
So people need to be a competent gamer to play that game. They can't. It's not a pick up and play title. And I think split screen, the joy of that on screen multiplayer was stuff like NBA Jam or you know, Mario. Well, things like this, simple, doesn't take much to learn, but are a whole bunch of fun with a group of people. And they just don't come around anymore. They're just not supported.
Yeah, it's pretty much just the Nintendo first party wheelbase. Yeah,
it really is. It's disappointing, really. And every now and then someone will try it. And I thought Kiln, like we talked about in our review, I think almost all of us mentioned the lack of split screen as being a criminal miss for that game. It really is. Because it could be a great, you know, along the lines of Human Falls Flat or Gang Beasts, I think, you know, that sort of silly kind of fun brawler that's fun for people to just pick up. They don't have to learn anything. They can just have a bit of fun with it and go from there. I think they really missed a trick, not including split screen there.
Yeah, that's not how you sell multiple copies of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it is easier to develop it online these days. Racing games not having split screen is criminal.
Yep.
I get why, like, you want those cars to look as realistic as possible, so it's Forza or something like that. Okay, but if you're not making Forza, if you're not making a realistic, it should have split screen. Like, there's no excuse to not have split screen in a race. Racing games are beautiful on a car.
And we've all got such big TVs these days. Yeah, exactly. Like, come on.
It's not like old school where you used to sit in front of your 48-centimetre TV
and your little quarter-window thing.
Playing with
your cardboard boxes stop screen cheating.
Picking odd job and getting yelled at by your mates for cheating.
Yeah, it's like big screens, half a width is fine these days. So yeah, racing game, it should definitely work. Yep.
I got one that I think took off for a while there. Audio logs. So I think it was BioShock.
Really kicked those off. Really, really to blame for that. They're still around. Like, they're in Pragmata. You know,
They're in Aethelion as well.
Yeah.
But I can read the text quicker than I can listen to the audio log. Yeah, so I
generally do that too. Yeah. Well, my wife complains when she's reading a book or something while I'm playing a game. She goes, "You're skipping shit again." And that's because I can read it quicker than I can hear. Because she goes, "All I hear is half conversations."
You're like, well, read faster.
Was it grappling hooks?
Which one?
Grappling hooks.
Oh yeah, everybody loves a good grappling hook.
Yeah, I do love like a good it seems grappling. Like just
you know what has a grappling hook? Aethelion.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
This is sounding like a better and better game, to be honest.
Because I think I remember like Just Cause really pushing that in being able to just go all out with it, and then when the last one of those didn't quite land as well as the previous ones, it seemed to have just like been.
There is a lot of talk that they're making a new one right now.
That's good to hear.
There's a lot of hints in job listings and things like that that are.
I also wonder if that wasn't a series that was kind of a victim of just budget creep into the following generation. Like
that would surprise me.
Yeah. Like they're big budget games, and when 4 came out, it did have a lot of tech issues. It is a really good game to play right now, and you can get it cheap, and so it's a lot of fun. And all those issues were sorted out, and as an open sandbox of destruction, it absolutely nails the brief. So you know, it's not deep in any way, but the things you can do with a grappling hook that has explosives attached to it and floaty bits and all these other things is a whole bunch of fun that you can do. So yeah, well worth checking out.
That's another one. Fun weapons.
Yeah.
What happened to fun, cool weapons? Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
Actually,
James,
Insomniac in general used to make the. Even Fuse, which was a terrible game, had really cool weapons. The one they did for EA. But yeah. Cool weapons. They don't come around. The gravity gun. How good was Half-Life 2? The gravity gun. That thing is still next level amazing.
Like, I always. Like, even like. it makes me think of like original Unreal Tournament, just having like the like that bio gun that's like the little globs that would stick on the ground and act like a mine kind of thing. Like that was so creative in what they had there. I definitely.
Or the greatest weapon in open game history, which is of course Saints Row 3's dubstep gun.
I was going to say praise glue gun, but no,
the dubstep gun where you shot dubstep beats at people and they danced until they exploded on the
yeah, wait for the drop.
Yep.
Speaking of drops, you know what's a really cool mechanic that's also an Athelion? Highlighted bits you can grab onto when you jump.
Oh yes, absolutely. That's that one. That was a funny one. You see developers argue for the yellow paint and things like that all the time. They're basically saying because people are idiots, we do this. You
know? It's because if we don't do this, you're going to be trying to climb half the environment because your brain then goes, why can't I grab onto that? It looks like I should be able to grab onto it.
Yeah.
So everything has to be flat and featureless, or it has to, you know, have the OH&S guy come out and quickly give everything a once over.
Here's your high-vis vest for when you start climbing.
Yep.
High-vis vest pickup.
We can't
bullet
have...
time. Where's bullet time? Where's that gone?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Max Payne remakes. Yep. I can't wait for those. That was.
I mean, GTA 5 had bullet drive time. Why can't we get it in combat again?
And it had bullet time as well. That was not Franklin. That was.
Was that Trevor?
No, Michael's. It was Michael's power. Mm. Yeah, Trevor's was like rage mode where he just became super strong, and then Franklin's was the bullet driving. Yeah, but yeah, bullet time. I mean, and it had no excuse in Max Payne. Like it was just there. Like there's no logical story reason for bullet time there. It's not like the Matrix. You know, he wasn't Neo. You know,
he was just stylish as all heck.
He just took a lot of painkillers and whiskey. And had a deep, grizzled voice.
Perfectly hard-boiled.
Yeah, that one got flogged to death for a bit, didn't it? A few of those mechanics that just kind of disappeared that got copied from that era.
You know, the nightmare. Also those nightmare stages.
Yep. Max Payne. Great. What about new mechanics? Do we see any ones that have come out recently that we see... getting copied? Like, I don't know that Pragmata's hacking minigame will get copied a lot because it's so specific to this kind of setting. I don't know how anyone could translate it to anything else, really, unless it's a sci-fi robot thing, which, you know, then it moves into copy territory, not mechanic territory.
I feel, for me, I think that the big one is, I just feel like, although it may be dying down a bit, it's just like everyone riffing on like the bonfires of souls games. Like that seems to be the at least for me, I feel like that's the biggest of the last 15 or so years, where it's just like
the souls style of gameplay is in general
weighty stamina based combat.
Parries and that, you know, having enemies respawn when you get to your safe, when you use your safe spot.
And, you know, to some point, I get it. Dark Souls, very successful, very well-regarded series, so I understand the need for other people to kind of walk that path as well. But I'm well-known for not liking Dark Souls just because it's not my sort of game, right? I just...
Yep.
I don't know why. It just never clicks. I've tried. But that's not to say that style hasn't clicked with me and others. Like, I really quite like the Jedi ones, which are a little bit more forgiving, I guess. I also quite like Remnant. And that's because that's got the most of it's ranged combat. It's still essentially a Souls-like, but the ranged combat, I think, sits with me a bit better. So, you know, I don't mind people exploring that concept in different ways. It's when it's a straight up, just copy that, it's not so great.
Yeah, it's a bit, I think, it's definitely like doing the straight copy that, like you said, is a bit overplayed.
Yeah.
Is it just, I guess it must just be so hard to come up with new mechanics these days.
Yeah, I think it is. There's nothing new under the sun. We've said that before.
I think it's also just, there's a lot of pressure on playing it safe because of the, at least at the bigger tiers, that there's not just the room to ideate properly.
Yeah.
Sort of things like, you know, I mean, the axe in God of War is a really cool idea that I think they were like worried that it was just not going to function properly for a long time.
I know with the coverage I did pre-release with Indiana Jones that the whip was such a concern for the development team. Like, there's that, you know, it was the one thing that you make an Indiana Jones game, you've got to get the whip right. And and they said it was so hard to do, and it was just like the hardest thing in that entire game. And that game is great. But they were so stressed about the goddamn whip and getting that right, and you know, feeling like Indy by being able to whip and glide over, you know, chasms and use it to take guns out of people's hands and things like that, you know. So when a mechanic like that is so clearly tied to an established IP, I guess you don't have any choice but you've got to do it.
Figure it out.
make it happen or just don't do the game, really. That's what that came down to. But it wouldn't surprise me to see them keep that in Wolfenstein, the next Wolfenstein game, which they're developing now. So
nice.
That'd be cool. If, you know, I can imagine some fun with a whip and some Nazis and you know some blades of some kind, or you know. They're not shy in dismembering Nazis machine games at all.
One thing that sort of felt really weird in Red Dead Redemption 2 especially was the kind of auto-fail going off the main path. Mm. And I know Assassin's Creed struggled with that for a very long time, and I hear that it's going to be gone from this remake of Black Flag. Figuring out how to get rid of the, oh, you failed the stealth part, better start again.
Yeah, yeah. The old stealth fail. Like, back the early Splinter Cell games used to...
Yeah.
As good as they were insta-fail games. So, what they did later with Conviction and then with Blacklist, with the shadow of where you last were, was such a brilliant little... And you could use... It ended up becoming a mechanic in itself, in that you could use that shadow to lure baddies around and manipulate them in intelligent ways. So, you know, thinking outside the box there, I think they created a perfect solution for it. And once again, I'll reminisce about how we haven't had a Splinter Cell game since 2013.
I mean, in a weird way, do you think something like Hitman and now First Light has sort of taken over that mantle in some ways?
In some ways, yes. But I think Hitman itself is very different in that it's a sandbox. Whereas Splinter Cell was always a linear adventure. And I think its biggest problem was... especially in the mind of executives, is it was an open world and it was linear and it was a small adventure. But I think now with the success of Pragmata recently, the success of Clair Obscur, there might be a bit of an eye-opening to publishers to say, hey, hang on a minute, maybe some kind of linear stuff isn't so bad at all.
These have a place.
People kind of like them, and they probably cost a shitload less to make than...
Yeah, they were.
The
thing that always got me, like, with Splinter Cell was that, like, you had the multiplayer stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they had such a cool, unique multiplayer game.
Absolutely.
That you could then have that to sort of funnel your secondary stuff into to help fund it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I never understood why they never sort of...
It's not like they didn't sell, and it's not like people aren't screaming for a new Splinter Cell game.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine the pop if, say, at Xbox or at Sony this year at their big presentation, they go, and the green lights from the thing come on, and That's a crowd pop moment, right?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I don't
care. It just must be so hard in that space. I mean, we had Naughty Dog, The Last of Us multiplayer.
Mm.
Like, how rough is it that a company like that is just like, actually, we know we spent a couple of years in this, but we're just going to toss it.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because multiplayer these days can't just be multiplayer. It has to be live service. It has to keep offering new. It has to be an only game. Like, they all want these games to be the only thing you play. We grew up in an era where multiplayer was a side dish. it was something you played once you'd finished the single player and you had mates around. And if you played it a bit, you played it a bit. Like, even Halo, right up to Halo 4. Halo 5, even, it had great multiplayer. Single player was shit, but the multiplayer was fantastic. It was self-contained. You didn't have to go on every day to get goals. You didn't have to season pass it. You didn't have ongoing content. You didn't have all this other shit. It was what it was. Every now and then you got a map pack came out. That was it. But yeah, it can't just be that anymore. And it,
I mean, the 360 was the era of the tacked-on multiplayer. People are like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, we're getting
another shitty multiplayer.
The dodgy
made
multiplayer.
By a separate studio.
Yeah, that was like, even Doom 2016 had that. Like, the multiplayer for Doom 2016 was
Spec Ops. The Line, shit. I think, had it as well. Like, yeah. Just all these like games that it's like, why does it need a multiplayer?
It doesn't need it. It doesn't need it. Yeah. But I do miss that that type of multiplayer. The multiplayer where it just is what it is. Mass Effect 3, I mentioned it before, that was surprisingly good. That was in the kind of tacked on, and I think a lot of people thought it was going to be just a tacked on multiplayer because you had to have it, but it turned out to be a really well designed kind of version of Horde mode. And
must
yeah.
be great for the developers to hear that. Oh, yeah. We thought it was going to be shit, but it was actually pretty good.
I'm pretty safe to bet everyone thought when Mass Effect 3 came out that the multiplayer was just going to be some tacked on EA shit.
But, well, yeah, it was EA, there we go.
Yeah,
one thing that I think has really bummed me out is, and it's probably tied into sort of Arkane Studios not really being Arkane Studios anymore.
Yeah,
is the cool stuff they did in Dishonored 2 with the clockwork level, and then sort of going back to Titanfall 2 with the time skip level, like
cause and effect.
That's that sort of stuff is like, where is that?
those really creative people. Levels that they do. I think Machine Games does them with their games, like Wolfenstein and Indiana Jones had those sort of levels in them. But yeah, like the level where you're in a wheelchair at the start of Wolfenstein 2 and things like that. So I guess they still happen. They're just not like... I think the knack of that single-player first-person shooter in a lot of ways... is gone. Mm. I think Doom Dark Age just tried it with the mech levels and the dragon levels. They just didn't quite nail them, I guess. They just weren't as good as the rest of the game, you know? So they didn't stand out. They like the rest of the combat was so good that it was kind of like
these were a real low light.
They were kind of like, yeah, it was fun for 5 minutes, but I just wanted to get back to being Doom guy stomping on demons up close and personal. So yeah. I guess that's the thing. If you're gonna make these gimmick levels, they've got to really stand out and be exceptional. Which cause and effect, like whenever I think of great levels in game, it's probably the first level I think of, that time shifting level from Titanfall.
Yeah,
it's just so well done. And even earlier, the level where you're in the factory and they've got their like building houses and streets and stuff in that factory, and you're kind of climbing up the side of this factory. That level's super cool too. Like, yeah, that game, yeah, that game.
I'll always shed a tear for the potential, for the lost potential.
Yeah,
punched so far above its weight, and the credit they gave to it. All because what didn't they put it up against Call of Duty or something that year?
In between Call of Duty and Battlefield. They released it in a week between those two games. Talk about shooting themselves in the foot. And one of those games was theirs.
Battlefield 1.
Yeah.
Which was a really good Battlefield.
Yeah. It's just, oh my God. Like, talk about shooting themselves in the foot. Like, they would have been way better holding that game until January or February and releasing Titanfall then. It would have done so much better. It just got buried. Such a shame. Such a shame. Oh, on that sad note, we might end reminiscing about Titanfall. Not for the first time, probably not for the last time. Rob, where can we find you, mate, and what have you been up to?
All right, so site-wise, of course, I've had the little look at Boulder Dash 40th Anniversary. I haven't got anything else in the pipeline at the moment. Real-life stuff's taking a fair chunk of time. Hopefully we'll have something, find something for that. And if you want to follow me on Blue Sky, that's just RobCap.
And on Progress Bar, sorry, not Progress Bar, Scanlines.
I've got a small thing that'll probably be out in a few days after this after the pod comes out. Just a look at the documentary Heart of Neon, which is a documentary that's very much down my alley, being on Jeff Minter and Llamasoft. So a little. The director got in touch and said, it's a project I followed for ages. He said, you know, the digital release is coming. Would you be willing to do something, a little something on it? And I thought I'd try and get something out for that.
Excellent, excellent. Well, if you want to write something, Player 2 is always there for you.
yeah. I mean, I wonder if I could use the experiences with iRacing Arcade.
Yeah.
Maybe we turn something up with that.
Yeah, awesome. Stephen, you got a couple of things in the pocket, haven't you?
Yeah, Athelion, Dead as Disco, which I remember playing on the Ally, which is probably the best version of, hey, it's a rhythm game, but you're punching people. Those are always a flaming bag dog shit, but this one's done a really solid job. And a bunch of tabletop stuff. Riot have loaded me up with Riftbound Unleashed, so we're going to have some stuff up hopefully this week about that. Stonemaier Games have sent me Vantage and a few other things, and Sheck Games Entertainment have loaded us up with the latest Ruins of Arnak expansion, the SETI expansion, and Starship Captains, and just a bunch of stuff. So yeah, heaps of tabletop and a couple of digital things that are pretty cool. And if you've got Game Pass, go and get Athelion.
Yeah, do that. Get Don't Nod the Nod. for me, I had my Invincible Versus, which I talked about. We did a group review of Kiln. Paul and I are doing a feature on Starfield, you know, Starfield 3 years down the track, what it's like from someone that hasn't played it, which is Paul, and someone that has and has gone back, which is me. I am trying to get a Death Stranding 2 feature out. It's stewing in my brain of how to write this, because I'm still not sure if I like it or not. So it's making it very hard to write. Like, I'm 20 hours in, I'm not sure if this game is good or it's terrible.
It's Death Stranding 2. If you like it or you don't, you're wrong. Yeah. So
it certainly is a Kojima game, I will say. That's about the best way to describe it.
As divisive as ever.
Yep. But apart from that, it'll be the usual stuff over at Player 2. Make sure you head over there and check it all out. We are doing, as I've mentioned last podcast, we're trying to change things up a bit and moving on to a new focus on features. I think we're all been around and reviews are good in some ways, but in a lot of ways they kind of box us in as writers. So we thought we might try some new paths and look at things in a bit of a different way. So please let us know on BlueSky@player2au if you're enjoying it, if there's something you want us to talk about or maybe a path to take. We're open to it. We still love writing about games, but perhaps not the process sometimes is a bit draining. So we want to keep things fresh and interesting. So let us know how we're going. Thanks for joining us on this, the 184th episode of the Player 2 Pixelcast. Subscribe, like, do all that shit, and we'll catch you next time on the cast. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.